Welcome to The Complete Musician, creativity at its core, exploring innovative musical ideas, thoughts, and techniques for the modern musician in today's society, with your hosts, James Nagus and Drew Phillips.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Complete Musician Podcast. You are here with Drew.
And James.
And we are here to bring you our weekly Q&A, which it will be weekly. We're piloting our new format.
The new
and this
Q&A.
Is what we're doing every other week. It's the new
and shiny Q&A.
Yes. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Just had lunch, sitting down with a nice Diet Coke, ready to drop some knowledge. How about you?
I am doing pretty well. I've got a couple more things to do today, some lessons and some like administrative stuff before the weekend gets here. But
long weekend too.
Yeah. Oh, not for us. We don't have Labor Day off.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. We've never had Labor Day off, but we do get a whole week for Thanksgiving.
Oh, well, there you go. Make up for lost time.
We do. We tend to offset those here. But anyway, that's not what we're talking about. Today, we
it could
have
be.
Our
Maybe
Q&A.
That's what our questions are about. When do you guys have breaks? Oh, good question.
Well, if someone wants to ask, then there you go. That's not what our questions are about today, but it could be possible in the future. But anyway, yes, we have questions. Thank you to everyone who sent in a question. Both on Facebook, on Instagram, we will put up question boxes, and they can be about anything. They can be about music. These are a lot about music, but there are some silly ones, and we appreciate mm-hmm. those too, because we will certainly answer them. And yeah,
that's right.
Just about anything you want to know. So anyway, you want to dive in?
Let's dive right in. I feel like we need some theme music for this Q&A thing. I feel like maybe we did at one point an episode before, some like it was a segment and we had a theme for this segment. So
we
what kind of music should we get for this?
I don't know. It should be, we had a composition corner. Do you remember that?
That's what it was.
I had like a silly, like maybe vibraphone and harp thing that sounded ridiculous. Okay. So anyway, this is our intro music to the Q&A. All right, here we are, and we are going to answer your questions. We'll start off with a serious one.
Okay.
Actually, you know what? You and I were actually kind of talking about this the other day in a roundabout way. So this is from Instagram. This is Andrew Seyman.
Andrew Seyman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just want to make sure I say his name right. I like the H in his name. I think it should be like Say. I think that's
what
it
is now. Always... Andrew, we have rechanged how you say your last name. Congratulations.
Yes, there you go. That's how I'm always going to say it forever. Andrew asked, suggestions for teaching sight reading.
Ah, we were just talking about this.
We were talking about this, a little bit ago. I think, honestly, that we could sum up like how to do sight reading with your students in a brand slogan in three words.
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
Okay.
What am I about to say?
I don't, but I'm curious.
Think about it. Yes, you got to say it. Okay, so think of a particular brand or like a company that has a slogan.
Okay,
let's say it in three. Ready? One, two, three. Just
eat
do
ice
it.
Cream. Oh, no. No, that's what
it
I was going to
okay,
say,
that
too,
would have been with.
Just do it. Yeah.
Well, okay, that's good. I mean, if you'd have said something like, where's the beef, that would have been weird too. But
we have the meats.
best way to get better at sight reading, I think, or one of the good ways is just do it. Just
now,
do
why
it.
Is like, that? What does brute forcing actually accomplish?
Well, I think that when you look into getting better at a particular skill, especially something like sight reading, which is a compilation of a lot of things, I think you have to go into the fundamentals of what makes it a thing, like what makes it a skill. And sight reading pulls so much together. It pulls together literacy, it pulls together accuracy, it pulls together like quick preparation, looking ahead, you know, all the oral skills, all of those things. And so I think you can, you know, individually target each of those in ways, which we might touch on in just a second. But in the end of it, I think a lot of sight reading is just literacy. And literacy that we know from learning how to read is just seeing a lot of things over and over, memorization, then relation to what you're looking at that moment. So like, the more that you ingest, like musically as you get older, the more that you learn to see familiar pitch patterns, learn to see familiar rhythms. And then when you see them for the first time, it's like your brain makes that connection, your body makes that connection. You go, I know this, I can just do it because I've seen it before. So the more that you, like said, brute force do it, like the more that you'll continue to ingest and put out music, and you'll make those connections as you see them later on, because you'll just recognize what to do.
That's right. I mean, I completely agree. I think the familiarity with, like you said, with patterns, with how things sounds, that's what allows for good sight reading. Sight reading is just on the spot audiation and pattern recognition. You can kind of think of it, like you said, in terms of reading, because reading's in the word. If you grew up reading a lot of books and say there's a word that, you know, you just read this whole time, but maybe you mispronounced it or something, like that's actually not a bad thing. So but then you finally have someone that teaches you how to say that word. So in addition to just doing it and just reading it, if you do it with someone else, that's like when you play with your students, then you make sure that they're actually hearing the correct way to do it, so that we're actually pronouncing that word, so to speak, correctly. And then next time you see that word, you'll get it right. So in addition to that, what I would add is I have a whole packet called horn patterns, which is scalar patterns, arpeggiatic patterns, random, like you name it. It's just different kinds of patterns in different key areas with the goal. And that's what I use for sight reading practice, with the goal of developing that muscle memory and that ear memory of encountering stuff. And in fact, that's why I think scale practice is useful. That's like the one application. It's not all state. It's not barrier exams.
Yeah.
It's patterns.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And then, like I was saying, I mean, there are so many things that go into sight reading that you can individually break down to, like you said, it's on in the moment audiation. So hearing a note, I think that was the question I was asking you like earlier this week, is like talking about how to get better at students saying they want to hear a pitch before they play it, which is certainly a part of sight reading. Yeah. And so I think knowing how to do that, which, I mean, you sent me the Schuller exercises, right, that you use.
Well, yeah, Schuller one is basically, it's a 12 tone, it's a tone row. And so it's harmonically disjunct. And so you really have to focus on how well you know what a major sixth followed by a descending seventh followed by an ascending third, like what that all sounds like.
Right. And so, like you said, doing that where you play a pitch and then try to sing the next one and then see how close you are and then sing the next one and that kind of thing can help in the audiation aspect of this. And then getting better at the skill of reading rhythm is, I think, a lot of clapping and counting. I do that with my students. I have rhythm exercises where I make them clap and count. And then I'm also a big proponent of knowing like shape and contour. So when I sight read with my students, sometimes I make them sing, and they're so uncomfortable with it. It's so uncomfortable they are with singing. And yeah, it's funny. And I remember being that way until I started like singing a lot more. And then
and also just getting over yourself and realizing like, okay, like, who cares? Allow yourself to sound silly. It's fine.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, yeah. So much of horn playing makes us sound silly. And so I make them sing, but I get them to sing like we talk about, a key of sight reading is not stopping. I think that's a huge part of sight reading.
That's a good point.
And so I make them sing through and sing at least the contour of the phrase, so at least they have a better shot of being able to go, you know, up and down, like recognizing when the notes are going up and down. So a lot of them, especially in times, they don't sing the right notes, which at that particular moment, the goal is just keep going and sing contour. So I'll put a line from whatever in front of them, or I'll like write out something for them, and they'll sing like in time. Like I'll put on a metronome or something, so they do have something to adhere to, and I'll make them just sing on la or something and sing up and down. So at least they know like this is the way the notes are going to go. It's, you know, I'll try to land in the ballpark, but it's usually not accurate, but that's not the goal at that point. And I don't let them stop. So that's important to develop that skill too, because that's also just like a just do it thing. Like don't stop, which is a habit that I think all of us have gone through at some point, is to stop and correct. But we know that in sight reading, like that is one of the most important principles, is not to do that. So the singing thing without the like need of accuracy is helpful in that aspect.
Right. And I'll add two more things. One is just a suggestion for especially horn players, is just to download all of the Maxime etudes. Either use the Maxime Alphonse book 1 and 2, or maybe the Patag preparatory melodies, because they're short and varied, and just have students read like one a day every single day. So seven. So what I'm having some students do is, okay, you're going to read 7 of these this week, play one for me next week, then 7 more and 7 more. And so they're just reading lots and lots and lots of music. But they're short, so it's like super easy to do.
The Patag ones especially.
And then the other thing is for just starting sight reading, because I've heard some sight readings where someone is getting the contour but just completely misses the first note. And so it's kind of like that out of the blue. So that's just the aspect of tasting the note, which is an article that I sent you that I wrote for the Horn Call. Which is just practicing accuracy, just note entry. And before you play, just going, pretending like you're about to play the note, what does it feel like? And then what's the sound that appears in your head? Is that the note? And if it's not, then you keep doing it until you can combine the ear with the face and just get confident with those.
I'm absolutely into tasting notes, and I use that a lot too. So anyway, those are our suggestions. Wow, Andrew, you got a lot on that. I hope that was really helpful for you. And that, but basically, just do it. And just as long as you're just doing it, they're going to get better. So, all right. So he actually asked two questions, because that was his real question. He also asked a fake question that we're absolutely going to answer. He's probably not expecting. Okay, if Glier and Strauss got in a fight, who would win? So here's my problem with this question. What's Strauss? Because that is a big key to this. Like, are
Johann
we talking,
Strauss
like,
was a very
Are we talking the Waltz
man.
King? Right. Are we talking like Franz Strauss, like that jerk? Or are we talking about Richard Strauss, which was, well, he's, I think, also kind of a jerk. So, and so, like, Glier, what I know about Glier is like, are you ready for this? I'm about to use like such Gen Z language. If I were to describe Glier, he is very mindful, very demure.
Very demure.
That is, you've heard, that's like their new slang. I'm like, guys, demure has been around since like the 18th century. You were just like recycling a word. Did you just, someone look it up in the dictionary and was like, that's cool. Like that
sound,
anyway.
It makes you sound fancy.
So, I know, right? So anyway, so I think Glier is, he seemed very well put together, very like courteous and well-mannered. And I think the entire Strauss family, I mean, Johann, not related, but then, you know, all of them, just anyone with the last name of Strauss, I don't know. I feel like they're a rough bunch. I wouldn't want to tangle with them.
Beyond the mental issues of Johann Strauss for writing that many waltzes, no one in their sane mind would do that. I'd put my money on Franz simply because he had to deal with Wagner. So if he could have thick enough skin to do that, then he's a tough cookie.
You know what I did learn, just for, as I was thinking about this, I looked up like Johann Strauss, because honestly I didn't know much about him. So I didn't know that his father was a professional musician too, like a leader of a band, or orchestra, whatever. I didn't know that he wanted Johann Strauss to be a banker, and when once he came home and said he wanted to be a musician, he savagely beat him to beat the music out of him.
Yikes.
And that's anyway, He had a rough time.
So there's probably some issues there, lingering issues probably.
Yeah, like a lot there.
I don't know so much anyway, about Gliere, but we'll assume that Gliere is just fine.
I mean, I don't know if I want to tangle with a lot of Russians.
Right.
But I would put money that a Strauss, Johann, Franz, or Ricard would win. That's
what I would put my money on. They combined together into a super mecha Strauss.
Yeah.
And
what would their Pokemon name be?
I was thinking more
the
like
three evolutions,
like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers style, and they just you know like one becomes
a
left arm,
type?
One becomes a right arm. Yeah, that's right. That's more
yeah,
like
a Transformer,
it. Megatron.
Yeah,
yeah. That's yeah. where I think Mega Electra
Strauss.
Came from.
Ooh. I think Mega Strauss sounds like a Pokemon. I don't know.
Strauss.
It's kind of lame. It might be, it might be a Yu-Gi-Oh!
Now,
thing.
Are
Who
we
going to
also
anyway.
Talk about Levi Strauss? Like, where does he fit into this mix?
Well, I don't know. I think it depends on the kind of jeans you like, because
right.
those are pretty stiff, and
okay.
I can't
right.
imagine. I don't know. Okay. Sorry,
Next
Andrew.
Question.
That was your answer. Next one. You go. You have a couple. One. We'll bounce back and forth.
Okay. This one comes from a Jeffrey Agrell, who we may
oh,
or not know.
Oh, good.
And he
Who
just wanted us
I,
to
specifically referenced about Swedish soap operas. That was my story.
That's right.
That was for him.
Well, he wanted us to talk about, and this is actually a really good topic. We could do a whole podcast, but we're just going to try to talk about it in as succinctly as possible. Talk
okay.
about what's missing or lacking in traditional horn study, and or what's over or underrated.
Is this? Yeah, is this like a chance? Are we supposed to plug him? Because I'm like,
yeah,
okay. What we need in horn literature is, of course, the latest Jeffrey Agrell book. But
That's
I can't
right.
say which
uh-huh.
one that one is because he releases one every other month. So I'm not.
Yep.
Sure.
It's the next. What's missing is the one he's writing right now, and what you need is the one he just wrote. There.
Yeah, and
done.
The next three novellas that he has published in. You know, Norwegian.
And they're all underrated. Just, and
I, you know, and this is not like to blow smoke, but I actually do think that the things that we did with him are underrated in the understanding of horn. At least what I didn't get initially in my horn study that I learned so much more about when I went to him about like why the horn works the way it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we first started, because I mean, up through my undergraduate, I did like harmonic series and overtone series stuff, but I didn't really understand the depth of it, you know, like mm-hmm. I didn't call the horns by their name, like at all. And
right.
maybe that's common for some people, but that wasn't my experience up until really I went to talk to Jeff and learn from him. And then, you know, the utilization that he does, and I mean, you know, because you studied with him too, like what he does and with his undergrads and with just anyone studying with him that he uses the harmonic series for, which is like literally everything. Mm-hmm. That I do think that is underrated in horn study from the initial point of contact for the student with the horn, because I think more emphasis needs to be put there, which I know, you know, he totally advocates for. And I actually do too. And in younger students, I go that way instead of, you know, how many of us were brought up, which is like, here's your, you know, Rubank book. And like, here's your scale stuff already that you're mm-hmm. already struggling to find partials. But anyway, so not to blow smoke at Jeff, but I do think he's a little right. Like, I do think right. that kind of stuff is underrated in horn study. Yeah, what about you?
I mean, I think the
in young
of
horn study
musical ownership, yeah. Which is improvisation. If we define improvisation as simply the ability to make a choice on our own, not like mm-hmm. jazz, but just simply the, you know, doing something from ourselves with agency, I think that's we don't get that in a lot of music, because it's always hey, play someone else's notes, do what your teacher tells you. There's no room for you in that model, which in this day and age of people struggling with motivation, it's hard to find extrinsic motivation. So finding ways to get intrinsic motivation, I think, is super important just for health and longevity of the instrument.
Yeah. And because general... of this, all of James' newest compositions will feature entire sections of improvisation.
I'm just gonna have a piece called "Just Do It," and it's gonna be sight reading practice, but it's gonna be a blank page. It just says improv, and I'm gonna charge $15.
Make sure you have to commission it, or you have to ascribe it to Nike, and make sure that they use it in their next commercial.
That's right. Yep.
Perfect.
And yeah. I will retire and live a life of luxury.
Yes.
No, that's one big thing I would say. The other thing, just a general concept, is of, I don't know, I kind of have a hot take about having written a book on progressive etudes, like simply relying on a progressive book as the sole, I don't know, materials you use. Like, okay, we're going to open this book and start on number one, and you're going to go and play all the way through number 100. And every student who's a freshman is going to do this. It's like, okay, there's actually more to life than someone's one progression, and everyone plays differently. And are we actually teaching fundamentals, or are we just having people play back random etudes? You know what I mean?
Would you... Yes, I... No, I totally get what you're saying. Like the everyone has to do the same thing approach. I don't do that.
Which maybe you know
like
what?
Every
okay,
single
maybe
thing.
Not etudes,
however,
like warm ups. Like someone,
okay.
This is
yeah,
so
yeah,
and
yeah.
so famous yeah. horn player, 60-minute warm up routine. Like great.
Oh
awful.
Yeah, no.
I'm never gonna play that.
Goodbye, Phil Farkas. I agree with that to a degree because, but I do think there are some good books that are useful that I do use with everyone because of how good they are and how simple they are. I would say like simplicity wins out when I'm assigning like that kind of literature. Like when everyone comes in, I would say that a majority of my students coming in have very little ability to phrase mm-hmm. and play musically naturally. And so everyone plays the Concombe studies.
Yes.
Like when
oh,
they
no.
first come in.
Don't get me wrong.
Right.
Just,
like,
before you go further, let me just clarify. I'm not saying we shouldn't.
Yeah,
use
that's
books.
Right. I'm you're attacking me,
should.
And so I'm really.
Of course, we both assign etudes prescriptively, right? We don't just
yes.
have one
yes.
set routine
yes.
for everyone, and no. we don't just say, "Okay, no. here's your etude. Come back next week, play it, and I'll assign you another." Rather than actually teaching students how to do these things,
right? We use them for a purpose, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So
but anyway,
otherwise,
so,
we'd
no,
be no better than an E. Howe article.
Well, that's all I am. That's where I get all my information. So that's.
Wow. I'm
that
surprised
the...
your students sound pretty good for if that's that trash.
Well, those are great. I don't know what you mean. I mean, that's how I learned to make waffles. That's where I learned to do a lot of things. It's like, anyway.
Yeah.
yeah. So, no, I get the essence of what you're saying. Yeah. You're right. It's like we are prescriptive. And mm-hmm. what we do. So you're right. I don't have a set thing that everyone does, but I have the same types of things that everyone does. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that either.
Nope. Not at all.
You know, same types of things. And
I had
overrated.
To include...
Oh,
oh yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to, no, go ahead. Cause I'm going to attack someone else. I'm going to fire shots. Go ahead.
All I was going to say was, I just wanted to include one slightly hot topic concept because people
yes
you know clickbait rage bait is a thing and so you sometimes you get engagement by saying one incorrect thing or one kind of like dicey thing so people will engage with your content. So
what you're about to say is going to be the title of the do you have a hot topic to talk
no,
about
that,
or
that was what we just
oh you were
about.
Just saying oh okay yes. Well I'll find some clickbaity title to put on this.
You won't believe what was said. I had to.
I made $10 million by not do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I made $10 million by not doing the Phil Farkas warm up. And
average day anyway. In the life of a music podcaster. Get up at 4 a.m., mm-hmm. work out, go back to bed, eat
yeah,
egg whites, go back to bed.
Drink egg whites, actually. anyway, I'm gonna fire shots with another hot take. This is directed specifically at a friend of ours, and she knows who she is. Overrated Vern Reynolds etudes.
Yes, agreed. And they're actually purposely designed to be overrated, so I guess he won.
Ah, so I did. So our friend, you know who you are. Do we... anyway, Okay. Next question. This is from at Frack City, which good old okay. Anthony. That's a great name. This is a good one. What advice do you have for a young teacher that teaches mostly non-majors?
That's a good question.
That's a really good question because, and I totally relate, Anthony, I totally relate because when I first came here, I had one music major and like nine non-majors. And now that's completely right. opposite, but that's how everything started. And that, I mean, I understand that, that struggle, that challenge. It's not a struggle, it's a challenge. Because of the environment that we all just came from and in college and conservatory and wherever else. And so my biggest thing, and I think as a teacher, I think we all develop this over time, is the realization that none of our students are like us in good and bad ways. Mm-hmm. And so realizing that the non-majors especially, they're doing this for a good time. Maybe a fine arts credit or like an elective credit or something they have to fulfill, but they're doing it for just literally on their own volition. They have no stake in wanting to get better other than literally wanting to get better. So the realization of that they're only going to be invested if I invest in them and that I make it worthwhile and valuable for them to invest in it. And the way that I have found that to be true with my non-majors and to keep their interest going is I have made most of their lessons really self-directed. And I have made a lot of literature choices and skill acquisition choices on them. So I actually give them a lot of power when they come into lessons. Like I find out if they had been studying with someone previously, I find out what they've been working on and I try to follow in that vein, or I ask, what are things that you want to get better? Do you know of any specific pieces that you want to play? And if you don't, here's a big list of listening stuff. What do you like? Let's do that because you picked it. Like, you want to get better at high range? Great. Then let's do things to get better. I make it really, they have to tell me what they want. Because, you know, with the music majors, it's like there's a level you need to reach. There's a level of ability and mastery on certain things that you need to be going for, whether you're going to perform, teach, whatever. But non-majors are just doing it for fun. So I make them invest in it, and I make them invest because they have so much of the power. And that's where a lot of their literature choices comes from. It's not me doing all of it. They have to bring it to me. That's been really helpful, I think, to make them feel it's valuable.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you bring up a lot of good points, and ultimately, communication and goals, that's really what it is. So setting those goals and setting those expectations and maybe changing what your expectations are based on their goals. Like you said, you just kind of ask, well, you try to figure out what their motivations are. Yeah, why are you interested in taking lessons? You want to get better for ensembles? Mm. Okay, great. Well, we can focus on that. You know, the question I always like to ask, and I sometimes do this on whenever I have like one-off lessons, like you're traveling around, it's like, but last time you picked up the horn, what gave you the most grief? Like what's preventing you from picking up the horn some days, or what makes you sad about the instrument? Like let's figure that out.
Because like you said, it's about sad about the instrument.
It's That's about the making best way the to instrument happy and making you happy when you play it. Because like you mentioned, for a lot of non-majors or minors, music is in many ways the release, the fun, the escape from the stress and the real life, quote unquote, of their other majors. So I don't think you should have lower standards. And I think that's what a lot of people struggle with, is just like, okay, well, that didn't sound good, but you're a non-major, so it's okay. Like, I don't think that's the good thing. You still have your standards, and treat people like they have the most amazing potential, but at that same time, have understanding that they're not going to practice as much. So their chops are maybe a little lumpy, or, you know, they all come from different backgrounds. They may have never had private instruction before. They may not know what the third valve does. I mean, you know, just like they just may be lumpy all around.
Your words today are so good.
But I think generally our concepts are the same.
Why don't we use lumpy in more like... Yeah. What can I describe today saying lumpy? I'm going to say lumpy. I'm going to try in my next lesson to say lumpy as many times as I can, but in really unrelated words.
Someone's phrasing
like your articulation
lumpy.
Was lumpy.
Yeah.
Would you say?
Someone's phrasing can easily be lumpy.
Yes, it can. I don't know if your articulation could be lumpy, but
I'm sure
definitely going
to
try
to
use it.
Find a way to make
it
lumpy. Yeah.
There's got to be. Your articulation created a giant pile of lumps.
Right.
Yep. I think that'll be a phrase I attempt. That's, anyway, good words today.
I have one more tip, and that's for either non-majors, minors, or even for double majors, is try to find a way to, because these are applied lessons, to either apply music in their other field or apply their other field in music, to make connections, to figure out projects or research that can bridge that gap. Because that's something that taps into, obviously, their other interests. And whether it's a research project or it's kind of a way of thinking or an approach to something, it can just be kind of an interesting way to tie things together and make those connections.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah. So I think all of that is good. Yeah, especially what you said about not lowering your standards. Mm-hmm. Because we don't want to do that. We want everyone to be the best they can be.
Right.
But anyway, yeah. So I would say for Anthony or anyone else in that situation, because I think when you're a first time teacher, I think a lot of people get into that situation. Like, make it valuable for them. Don't lower your standards, but try and connect to them as much as possible, realizing your expectations are, you know, they got to be realistic for them. And, you know, let them self-direct it. Why are they there? What made them sad? Try and make them happy with the horn.
That's right.
Okay.
Should we go to the next question?
Next one. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So this is from Gary Kuo. And it's some of us, he wrote clear his throat, compose but can't play horn. What does it feel like for both of you, I guess referring to us, to be awesome composers and horn players? So I paid him to ask this. No, I didn't do that. But
my answer is I'm going to reply in a phrase.
Okay.
Maybe we're born with it. Maybe it's Maybelline.
It's Maybelline. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
That's
too.
My answer. Yeah. That's my answer. So, Gary, I think the answer is play horn. The end. Dump the violin. Play the horn. The end. And you can hang out with us.
Build your own electric horn like you did your blue violin, and you'll be there. You'll know.
See? Easy. That was... Good.
We
that
don't
want to
answer that
All
question
right.
because that is the light at the end of the tunnel. If we give you that answer, you won't know. You won't have anything to chase.
You'll have. That's right. What will you work for? I know. Okay, good. All right. If you don't
question.
Know Gary's music, go check it out, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Great. Also, I like how Nick described us as aliens. That was good.
Thanks.
Nick Kenny
I don't know what
describing
means.
Us as aliens. Yeah, me neither. So... Maybe you're the alien for saying that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Trying to hide.
I think Nick is the alien.
Yep, Nick's the alien. Okay.
Red herring. Done. That's what I'm going to title this. Nick Kenny is an alien. That's what I'm going to title it.
That's right.
Q&A. Nick Kenny is an alien. Question. Yes or no. Vote on your phones. There you go.
That'll be the next podcast.
That's a good one. Okay. Let's see. I have another question. Okay. So this is from... At basically Eli, I'm going to say his last name wrong, Rogue? Rogue?
Okay.
Rogue? Okay. So Eli says, he directed this at you, but we're both going to answer. James, what is your favorite horn duet that you've written?
Favorite duet that I've written? Oh.
That you've written? You've written a bunch. I assume he means with accompaniment.
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know. It's hard to compare the acoustic with the fixed media ones just because they're so different. But I have a story and a soft spot for kind of every piece. I mean, Reverie was the first. Aww. That has nice melodies.
Aww.
Pastoral Scenes nice. Across the Board is, I think, like the most fun and prettiest.
Was originally just a duet.
Just a duet. Yep. And then I added piano just to give the horn players some rest. And
I really love, that's really fun to play. I love
and
it.
There's a version with string orchestra accompaniment too. Not many people know that.
No.
But
no, wait, yeah. I did know that. Yes, yes, okay.
Yep.
That's
well, but then I don't know, the fixed media stuff is just kinda cool. Like Odyssey and Silhouette. They're just fun.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Do you have a favorite one of mine? I mean, there's others. There's Lullaby for Eddie. There's Venturi.
Different.
There's Golden Hour.
There's
yeah,
other Journey's things. Call, which
Journey's
is
Call.
The start of the
yeah.
podcast.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
We've how many have we done together? What was the one we did? Cloud Break.
Oh, Cloud Break. Yeah, I forgot.
Cloud Break. We did that one.
People like that one because it's free.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, that one's nice. We did that. We played Reverie once together.
We did
once.
Yep,
we did. Long in the long, long ago.
In the long,
that was like 12
ago.
Years ago. That was like a long time ago.
Yeah,
like a decade.
You're right.
How many other ones have we done? We've never done Journey's Call.
That's funny. We've only done it manufactured digitally.
Yeah, yeah. We've never actually played Journey's Call together.
And you've played some of my duets with me on piano with other friends of ours, but
yes, I played Pastoral Scenes. Mm-hmm. With the person who loves Vern Reynolds. we're not gonna say her name. We're just not. let's see. And yeah, and I played your other things that are horn and other instruments. Like mm-hmm. your horn intro. I played Spectra. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that's
I
right.
Know. I they all are pretty cool. I really like Reverie. That's really nice.
That was the original.
It lies
one.
On the horn so yeah. well. It's yeah. I really like that. Old James Nagus.
Indeed, old. So old to answer Nagus. Definitively, there is no definitive answer. But it's like yeah. I don't know. It's like you open up the door and there's a whole bunch of Ben and Jerry's flavors in front of you. Like they're all gonna be good. Is that egotistical?
It's
to say
true.
That? I don't mean that my music is gonna be good, but like, they're all okay.
Thank you.
Okay,
for
so let's say rather than Ben and Jerry's, let's say you open up the thing and it's like all Edie's or Breyers, like it's all.
Or you just go to the grocery store
okay.
and open up the ice cream thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. That's right.
There's like all there's good ice cream and then there's like not good ice cream.
Right. Like Edie's,
just
you know. Breyers.
But yours
go
is
the
all
Haagen-Dazs.
Good. So they're all just different.
Mm-hmm. Some will
different.
Give you.
Yeah.
Some will upset my stomach and others. Most of all, anyway, let's. What about
cool.
your favorite
yeah.
duet that you've written?
I've written a lot of horn and
like other
something
instruments,
else.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah. We can
like,
broaden it to that.
Yeah, I like the. I guess I have two. I have one that no one knows about that I wrote for a student of mine. That's two horn and piano called Shrouded Pathways. I recorded a really rough demo. That
oh,
was like it's
I remember
easy,
that
easy
one.
Duet. Do you remember that?
It's
that
pretty
was a while
though.
Ago.
It's nice.
Yeah, I need to. We need to play that at some point. That one, that was nice. And then I really like the one that we got to do together. I like my version of Odyssey.
Yes,
that was originally horn and tuba, right. And then I wrote it for two horns that we mm-hmm. did. That was fun. Got to
yeah.
do that. That was a good
yeah.
time.
We gotta play more stuff. Yeah. We have to. I don't know, like. is there a robot that can just play piano for us or something like that? And then we can actually play our own two horn pieces.
I know. That's. Oh, I did like our. And then the arrangement I did of Paper Mario. That was
yes.
pretty fun.
I was wondering. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. Anyway. Okay, cool. That's the answer.
We're at like almost 40 minutes here. So maybe one or two more questions. Or how many do you have
okay.
left?
I am. I think I'm out. How many do you have
okay.
left?
Okay. I just have one more. So maybe this will be our last
okay,
question.
Cool.
We can try to
well,
be
well, that's pretty good for.
One.
Yeah. And that's pretty good for like me putting this up so late yesterday.
Like, right. Yeah. Well, maybe yeah. we'll get more questions in the future too. It's always fun.
I hope so.
So this last yeah. question is from Catherine Roche Wallace. And she asks
oh, yeah.
for us to talk about meeting. Hold on. Let me try that sentence again. So alliteration is making me tongue tied. Meeting
well,
modern alien, college so. Students where they are. So essentially,
oh,
how
wow.
to teach
dealing
a varying
with the Gen
level.
Zers.
Well, I was thinking more of skill set than bad lingo.
Oops. Well, that's how I read it. bad lingo. okay, go ahead.
Well, I think we actually kind of touched on a lot of those points in a similar kind of concept with dealing with non-majors, which is just you just got to ask people what their goals and expectations are and realize that our job as educators is exactly that, to meet students where they are and to make them better. And that growth happens every day in small doses with consistency. And so instilling good habits and teaching students how to teach themselves, regardless of their natural aptitude or their relative lack of experience, our job is to not be cookie cutter and to be prescriptive in our approach. And also, like, I guess, a couple times. I don't know.
That's right.
But this is an audio medium, but every once just in a while on screen, so.
You got to hit the whoa a couple of times.
See, I don't, what even is that? I don't know what that is. Okay.
No one saw that, but I took you have to. That's okay. Everyone, like I said, the people who are like TikTok generation that were born like 98 and afterwards are like screaming at their phone right now. Anyway.
Okay. After you have your answer, we can have a quick facetious answer segment of this question.
Okay, got it. My answer is exactly what you said about, because I would say that we both have students that we would consider green, and the word naive is terrible, but like maybe not exactly sure when it comes to like, I want to be a music major, exactly what you're getting into. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Right.
You know, like, because there's a level of like real dedication is not the right word, but there's like a sacrifice of into being like a music major and pursuing music as a career that is tough to stomach, I think, if you're not like totally engrossed with it, or maybe even come from places that the opportunities weren't even there for you to understand. Right. You know, like if you're from like really, really small town, you know, wherever, and you were the only person interested in music in your place, and it's like a place of, I don't know, 500 people, that it's like
you were,
it's hard to know, you know. Yeah. And you come to school and it's like, oh wow, I'm like this little fish, and like there's everyone around me is like, feels like they're so much more advanced. So that's tough to work with. So I like what you said, tempering expectations as a teacher, knowing that we meet the students and we address the pressing needs that get them to where their goals are, not lowering standards, but like I think that also entails a little bit more work on us as teachers. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we have to, if it's a student that is like, maybe not as like, it's all these negative words and connotation, but it's not meant to be like, maybe not as knowledgeable about, you know, literature or about abilities or stuff that we know to be the life and the sphere that we've spent so much of our lives in, then it requires us to work with them on that. Like, we have to get them up to speed. That's totally on us. I think so. I think that no one should ever be blamed or suffer for what they don't know because they've not had the opportunity to have that.
Right. I was just going to say, to not ever shame someone for something they don't know if there was no reason they should have known that.
Right. Right. I'm totally, we are both in agreement on that. So I think that means that we have to work a lot harder to really make sure that they can hold their own with anyone else, because that's our job. It's 100% our job. So meeting them where they are, knowing what their goals and aspirations are, and then us really working our butts off to get them to that point, because they deserve that. You know, they deserve those opportunities and experiences like everyone else. So that just may mean some, I hate saying remedial, but like going back and starting from beginning, like fundamentals, knowledge, literature, like all those kind of things. So we have to be super knowledgeable about our content and then really practice our delivery of instruction and teaching from a level that's maybe not where we think someone, or like where collegiate study begins, which could be a whole spectrum, to the highest level we possibly can, is what I think. But anyway, Do you have anything to add? Because I want to go at it from one more angle, but go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, just really quick. There are certain, I think, agreed upon levels of proficiency at different age levels and different degree programs. But that being said, it's, I don't know. I feel like people grow and learn and advance at many different levels. Like sometimes I feel like I plateaued, and then in school, sometimes it got worse. Yeah. And then other times you go up. So at a certain point, you know, it's our job to be real and honest and be like, here are the expectations for success in this particular field doing this. But also just remembering that people are there to learn. Like there's, if you have a student that's got it all figured out, that's actually, they're not in the right spot then. So like someone, if they're making, if you get frustrated, if someone isn't getting it, if they're not, if they're confused, confusion is a state of learning. Like just be patient.
Yeah.
And help them, teach them. You know,
I like
don't just get angry. They can't do something.
Oh yeah. Oh, you're right. Absolutely. And then the other side of it, that I'm going to come at it super quickly from how, if I'd see, that's how I read Catherine's question is like, how do you connect with this generation?
I see. Yeah.
And,
okay.
You know, and with that, honestly, I think it's actually kind of imperative that we do stay kind of on top of current things.
Sure.
Like, not that we have to use, you know, the language that they use. We don't have to watch
that would just embarrass
TikTok them. Well, they cringe and then they're like, ooh, like you just, what did you say? Like, yeah, I do want you to try. See, after this podcast, I'm going to show you the woe, and I want you to do it in your next in your next lesson. I just want you to hit the woe just once, and that's totally cringe because it's old now. Like no one does, but like, you know, that kind of thing. I do think we have to stay a little bit like on top of that kind of stuff a little bit, because we are going to keep teaching the younger generations, and they're going to come in, and they're a really different generation than we grew up. Mm-hmm. Because we are, I mean, you and I are, we're millennials. So like we are the digital age. We are from nothing to tons of digital age. So we're in like that weird spot, and they're all digital. So it's, we have to stay on top of those practices. I think of like how to communicate and the way that they communicate, and like understand that in teaching, I mean, there's probably been studies. I'm going to make a really broad generalization. Maybe it's a hot take, but the attention spans are shorter.
Yep.
And it's, I think we have to be a lot more animated and a lot more, I don't know, like, I don't know, bouncy in lessons. We have to like be a lot more on top of like being proactive to make them do stuff. Because it's,
I will agree to a
it's
point.
It's not as self-motivated.
I'll agree to just a point, because I think you should be who you are as a teacher and not try to be something else.
That's true. Not
unsustainable.
Fake.
Unsustainable.
Right. Right, but, right. You can't be fake. No, that's not what I mean. Yeah.
But I agree. Mm-hmm. And my facetious comment was in a world that watches TikTok, you should keep all of your lessons to approximately 8 to 12 seconds long, because that's all people pay attention for these days. And that's it.
You know that. You know what the
and
new
make
thing
sure you
is,
have like
is
a maze
make...
runner thing in the background too while you're teaching, or some like the goo or whatever.
Goo,
like the... slime, like what? I don't know.
The new thing is like on content is to make it like 2 seconds long, so that the algorithm perceives it as playing
it over,
it
over
and
over and over
and over
again.
And over, and you suddenly rack up your plays or whatever. Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
That people like delve into the science of that? It's insane.
It's sad.
It's
so maybe what you're saying is, you know, an articulation exercise is like, okay, here's your exercise, is to go bup. Now we're just going to loop that like a TikTok video, and the kids are going to be like, I get that, and then there you go.
I've always wondered what would happen if you like, I want to see a performance one day where someone has to play like a really standard horn solo, and they go out in the recital and they put their hand in the bell, but in their bell, they're holding like a recorder or something, or like something that plays, and they're just playing like I'm going to play Mozart too. And they walk out on stage and they bow and everything, but then they press play on Dale Clevenger's version of Mozart too, and it comes out of their bell, and everyone's like, this is wonderful.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, this is so clean and nice.
Delving
and like,
into Idiocracy.
Oh, wow. Yeah, why not? I mean, That's great.
No, here's my idea. I'm saying this on air because TM. Okay, it's a musical service. We're gonna do this. It's called Vamp, and it's just little music bits that are just repeated over and over again. And this is the new generation of new content. We could have educational vamps. We could have entertainment vamps. And this is, and then we'll interlace subliminal messaging that people can buy spots like drink Pepsi or whatever. And we're just gonna make tons of money.
You're putting this out in the world. Someone is gonna do this or has already done this.
And... But I own the intellectual property rights now because that's how it works.
You do
say it once.
You have said it.
You own it,
especially on a podcast. Especially, yes, we are. Yes. Okay. Well, it's put out in the world. So, anyway, okay. Those are good answers, I think. And we are reaching 50 minutes, and that was a while.
Yeah, we're gonna.
So. Yeah. So anyway, thank you to everyone who asked a question. We enjoyed answering them. Please continue to ask us questions. We're going to do this every other week. And yeah, anything you want to know, music, life, silly stuff, whatever.
It's all fair game, mostly.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to the podcast. We'll be back with you again with a topic that we're going to discuss. That will be 15 minutes as our new format
the
dictates,
shorter thing.
Not this shorter thing. And if you want to get in contact with us, then all of our socials are below. Our websites are below. Email us at coremotohorn@gmail.com. Go follow us on Instagram. Follow both of us. And reach out if you want to. But thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon.